So when it comes to AI replacing and that fear that's there, you know, for me, it's really more about how to work with AI and make it your partner instead of being afraid of it. You know, work with the AI, make it your buddy in a way and have it do all the tasks that you don't like.
Run toward the unknown when you're riding the big wheel. You're not alone.
So Beth, I am so excited to finally have you here on Riding the Big Wheel.
Thank you for having me. Been excited for this for a while.
I know. So I thought we could just talk a little bit about how we met.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to meet you. I actually sought you out. And not stalking, right?
No, just kidding.
No, I didn't stalk you out. I sought you out.
Absolutely.
There is definitely a difference. But yes, I sought you out through Emory. And it was actually through something called Goizetta Impact.
Yeah.
It's the Emory Impact program. And I hadn't been involved with Emory for several years. I had children and just kind of stepped back a little bit. And I was so excited to go. I said, I'm going to research every female on that list. Oh, my God. The list was, like, really long. I actually got through it, but I got very lucky. Because I went, oh, my God, you encouraged me to go on because your name is Bergman.
Yeah, so I had to be top of the list, right? Yeah.
You're right at the top of the list. And I went, okay, if they're all like this, I am so lucky. Anyway, that is how we met.
It is. Yeah. And I think our lunch hour went way longer than we expected, but I really enjoyed it and happy for where kind of our friendship and work alignment has gone.
Thank you. So I would love for you to talk to people a little bit about just where you work, what you do, and then we're going to talk a little bit about also just your personal journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the Senior Vice President of Solution Strategy at a company called Tell-Aid. Most probably don't know who Tell-Aid is, but the simple way of thinking about it is walk into a Home Depot, walk into a Target, Walmart, Starbucks. There's all this technology around you that powers the store. Things from cameras, access control on the doors, your checkout system, wireless networks, and connectivity. All that hardware, Tell-Aid can design. So where should it be in the store to make it work the best way? We can deploy it. So the smart hands in the field, making sure it gets done. And then we keep it running up and running afterwards. So that's what Tell-Aid does. I have the privilege there of working with an amazing team really focused on emerging technology. So what that actually means is a couple of different areas. AI, which I think we're going to talk about quite in depth today and I'm excited for. Robotics, which has a nice parallel to AI and they're pretty similar and connected. Then we also look at things like IoT device management and any way we can help automate the technology that is in your stores or your restaurants or your logistics facilities.
I have got a list that's like a mile long because I talk to people here that I work with at Sales Globe. And how they have a lot of questions around AI. So let's talk about, I think you have an interesting backstory from in college, playing in sports, and it even goes before college. And then what really led you to make the decision that you did to get into technology and then ultimately into emerging and disruptive technology?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, from the time I can remember, 5 years old, actually probably 3 years old, we have a picture of my dad holding me with a basketball. Oh. That was really my passion and what led me to a lot of the life decisions that brought me here today. So played college basketball, was fortunate enough to go to Emory where I had the best tribe of women on my basketball team. Oh. I mean, really foundationally the best group of humans that I have ever met and are still my best friends today. When I was younger, I thought I was going to be in the sciences. My dad's a dentist. My mother's a physical therapist. Could take over my dad's dental office or, you know, follow in my mom's footsteps, something along those lines. And I distinctly remember, I think it was junior year, I was taking AP bio. And I'm sitting with my parents. We're studying, trying to understand photosynthesis or mitochondria. And I'm looking at them with these blank stare. Like I just couldn't get it. And that was a pivotal moment for me where we all decided collectively, maybe science, you know, the whole doctor, physical therapy, dentist route isn't for you, Beth. And that was okay. And that was really when I started to pivot and think about, well, what do I enjoy? You know, I enjoyed history. Mm-hmm. I enjoy understanding how things work. I was of that age where, you know, we had a cell phone, you know, maybe when I was 16 or 17, but it could call out and you had limited minutes. There was no apps. There was no social media. Things right. were the wild, wild west, right?
Yeah. yeah.
And, you know, but I was intrigued by that. And so I really thought, okay, I think I'm going to follow this business route. And Emory happened to have a fantastic business school. So I was really fortunate to get into that school and get engaged there and then kind of follow this path to where I'm at today. Heavily in marketing at first, but that marketing was all in technology companies. Started in a really interesting small legal technology shop. Not the most exciting, but I learned a lot of like coding and engineering and what goes into developing a system. Then I moved to a actually newspaper advertising software company. Again, not super fascinating in terms of what it actually did, not my passion, but I learned a lot. And I was doing marketing for these companies all along. So I learned this B2B marketing space. And finally, I moved to a company called Global Payments. They're local here in Atlanta. Got exposed to some really awesome international teams. And just was really hooked. I worked really closely with their product marketing team. And so was working in the development of new applications and new solutions that they were going to roll out. And that kind of got the bug. Okay, this is really cool. Technology is awesome. How do I take what I know from business and marketing and kind of merge it together? That's how I ended up at Telaid today and really, you know, was looking at the market and the needs. And I said to my CEO, you know, we need to tap into this space. We really need to be the early adopters for our clients on what this new technology means. And I was able to build this emerging tech group. We're about year three into it and just skyrocketing in terms of just the vibe, the energy, and the success. It's a really talented group and I'm loving every second of it.
That's really incredible. And a really inspirational part of that story is around you deciding and understanding that a path that you really shouldn't go down, which if you think about it, it could have been an easier path in some regards, right? If you took over the practice or joined a family practice, but you really took the time to understand and sit back and say, okay, what am I most interested in? And, you know, where can I go next? And I like to talk to people about that because you can also do that at any age and stage. Now, you did that fairly young in life, but I know you and I both come across a lot of people that have recreated their careers mid-career, later than mid-career. You can do it at any time. And I would even argue with today's technology, it might even be easier.
No, absolutely. And, you know, the first 12, almost 15 years of my career was solely marketing focused. Mm-hmm. And it's really been the past 3 years that I've pivoted more into this product solution, almost consulting type approach, and found kind of a regeneration of what I want to do and excitement and passion for my career again, which is really awesome.
That's so great. So I want to shift and talk a little bit about AI. And I did a little research,
right?
I told you I did some research. And I wanted to kind of ground ourselves just in some definitions because you and I had a conversation around if I was to ask 10 people how they define AI, I'm probably going to get 10 different answers.
Absolutely will.
You know, the more I ask, the more answers I'll get. And I found I used ChatGPT this morning, and we'll talk about what
One of my faves, yeah.
Oh, good, right. We'll talk about how you leverage, and we will get more into it. And said, okay, really people talk about it around these four different factors, right? I would think of it almost as competency areas. And we're not going to go deep into all of them, but I do encourage people, if you want to know more, take a quick search in chat or whatever it is your engine of choice or your GPT of choice.
Yeah, just have a conversation, whether it's Claude, ChatGPT, Copilot. You're really having a conversation and you can learn a lot and dig in as much as you want.
And we are going to talk about researching conversations in a moment. I don't want to forget that one. So it basically came back to me and said, there's four ways you can think about it. We think about the capabilities that it has, the functionalities that it has, we're not going to go deep into these, the learning method, So whether it's supervised, unsupervised kind of learning, and then applications. And that's really where I wanted to spend time today. So when we think about applications, there are things like generative AI. I know you know a lot about that. Computer vision, robotics, robots versus robotics, right? There's that whole thing. NLP and conversational AI, which we discussed. So first, from your perspective, like when you think about AI, how do you think about it and defining it where it is today? And then let's go into some of these different areas of AI.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So you know, it's hard to define AI.
Yeah.
You know, you can get into, you know, the kind of educational aspects of it where it's, you know, the large language models, it's the machine learning, it's understanding the data and doing something with it. And whether that is from a, what I like to call perception AI, which is what you talked about, the computer vision, the natural language processing, auditory, it's AI that's perceiving what's in front of them. It could be that person gesturing wildly. Is that a threat or are they happy? It could be walking up to a kiosk and you're in China and you don't know how to speak Mandarin, but you speak in English. And the kiosk can say, yes, I can get you that burger with fries. And your order is placed and you have no friction there, which is really a key piece of it.
Wow.
It can be, you know, ordering at the drive-thru. You know, maybe it's, again, in a different language where it comes through. So those are all perception AI, and it's a big piece of how we interact with our environment and how the AI learns from it. Then what you talked about is that generative AI or conversational AI. It's sitting down with the GPT of your choice, Claude, Copilot, ChatGPT, there's more Bard, there's more out there, and just asking questions. It's, you know, I want to lose 5 pounds, help me figure out what a good diet plan could be. My back's been really hurting from running, I want to take a week off, what's a 3-day workout you can give me? My mom's going to Ireland this spring and she knows all the stops that she's going to, but she doesn't know how to optimize the trip, find the right resources and different touristic places. So she put all the stops in to ChatGPT. She said, hey, these are a couple key things I know I want to hit.
Yep.
Give me an itinerary. And then she's fine tuning the itinerary just through asking different questions and prompts. That can be applied to the business world as well. Help me create a social media calendar focusing on these 4 or 5 themes. Create me a blog. Write an email response to this because I'm really emotional and I know my response will be emotional, but I need a very professional response to it while still getting my point across.
Yep.
That's really the generative AI, and that's the tip of the iceberg on that side of things. Then we start moving into what we're talking about is agentic AI.
Okay.
And that's where it's not just conversational. It's not just doing the prompts. It's actually learned and can make decisions. So a lot of our robust systems like SAP, ServiceNow, Salesforce, they're all integrating agentic AI to reduce manual tasks. I have to go in and I have to input this data. And based on that, then I have to click this and then I have to click that and then I have to input this data. With agentic AI, you can teach the AI how to do all these things off the data it's fed and then start learning to look for things that I should be looking for, maybe as a project manager or as a sales professional, right? It'll not only remind me that I should have followed up with company ABC, but I was supposed to do a follow-up on security and here are the resources that they need. And, I already did it for you, as opposed to that more generative AI that's just going to kind of guide you on it. And then kind of the last piece of it is this physical AI. And it's taking that perception AI and everything else we talked about, and it's the interaction of actual physical pieces in our world operating on AI. Think drones, think self-driving cars. Right? That's really where the physical AI aspect comes into play. And I mean, that's simplistic, but it's also really powerful if you think about the applications, both personally and professionally.
That's pretty amazing. Okay, so let's recap those. Generative AI is what I would think most people who are listening would be familiar with today. And I will tell you, I also personally leverage it like that. As being a consultant and a researcher, gosh, it can save you
so much
time. And when I think about when we're researching and looking at our clients, I mean, I would have people here, analysts, and their job was to read annual reports of companies. You know how hard that is, yeah, right?
Just load it.
Now it's just load it.
Summarize it for me.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So most people, I think, would be familiar with that. Now, about how long, I started using ChatGPT, I don't even think it's been a year yet. How long has that actually been out in the public, if you will, and how long have...
Yeah, I wish I could recall exactly when ChatGPT launched, but it's a good solid two years that I've been using it pretty readily. And then, you know, Copilot with Microsoft caught up pretty quickly.
Right.
Google with their Bard and Claude, and there's some others out there. And then it was just like, bam, floodgates are open.
Yeah.
You've got ones that help you create PowerPoint decks. Canva, which is a really popular with the creatives, has AI integrated to help, you know, speed and automate up your design work. Mm-hmm. You've got ones for image creation. If we can't find an image that we're looking for, we just put in the prompts, it'll generate it for you, which is really interesting now in this like photography space where it's hard to get rights to use images. Mm-hmm. Well, this is an AI generated image. Really aren't any rights around it, which is probably a whole other topic
right.
we could go off on from that side of the house. So, you know, it's if you need a task done that normally would take you a long time or you don't even have the skill sets for it, maybe you're not great at PowerPoint, mm-hmm. maybe you're not a great designer or, you know, you're not great at drawing or you're not great at writing content or copy, there's an AI application for that somewhere.
Wow. So people can have a good outlet for their ideas and their thinking and get some assistance. Okay, the second one you mentioned, do I have it right? Perception?
Perception AI.
Okay.
Yeah.
And perception AI, again, recap for our
listeners. So that's your computer vision. That's your natural language processing. Think about using senses interact. The AI uses their senses. It could be using a camera to see the environment and learning from that environment. Is there water on the floor? Is a line queuing up too long and people are going to start abandoning it? What areas of the store do people hang out in? Is someone gesturing wildly that could look aggressive? Mm. Or, you know, someone in the ball in the corner or maybe having a heart attack or something like that. Mm. It can learn that sort of things. And then the natural language processing would be, you know, auditory, listening, hearing the environment and responding in a way that is native to the person.
Yeah.
So I was in Chile recently, and I was flying out of the Santiago airport, and there was a McDonald's there, and they had a bunch of kiosks, and I'm always interested in different technology and how the kiosks worked. So you could go up to this kiosk, and you could just start talking in your natural language, which for me is English, but obviously Santiago is a Spanish-speaking country, and so that's just a really nice way where you can use AI to hear, process that and respond accordingly so that the task, which was, you know, I actually didn't order anything. I was just playing around, but maybe my task was ordering a hamburger and get it done.
Game changer.
It really is.
I mean, I just can't believe it. I think about what that will do for people traveling abroad. I travel a lot. I speak a few languages, but there's many that I don't. I went to Southeast Asia a couple years ago and it felt really funny to be in a country that it's happened to me before where I don't know anything, right?
Yeah.
That's being said. And so this truly is a game changer, I think, for retailers, for industry, hotel, just everything.
Yeah, those spaces are just, it's really going to benefit them wildly.
Wow.
And just a seamless customer experience. That's what they're looking for. If you listen to any of their, you know, quarterlies, that's what they're all about. How can I make it a frictionless customer experience. And AI can really bring a lot of that to the table.
And the third one you mentioned, agentic, which is coming.
Yep.
It's on the horizon, but it sounds like it's here as well in some areas, some companies.
Yeah, there's a lot of it that have rolled out already. The level to which it's rolled out, right, is constantly evolving, and that's just what's going to happen with AI. But the idea there is really just to automate tasks within, you know, systems is a good example. So I think Salesforce, ServiceNow, SAP, that would be manual for someone, but it also has a decision-making aspect. So I'm doing my manual tasks, but there's decision trees. There's things I need to make decisions on based on taking the next step. the idea with agentic AI is to train them to do that, almost like a personal assistant as well. Yep. They should be able to proactively understand your needs and decide upon it versus reactively or asking them questions like in Gen AI.
So one of the things that everybody's talking about and everybody is, I had questions from my team that wanted to talk to you about AI displacement of jobs.
Yeah.
And, I'd love to get your take on that.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. Mm-hmm. It is out there. People are talking about it. People are worried. So when it comes to AI replacing and that fear that's there, for me, it's really more about how to work with AI and make it your partner instead of being afraid of it. So think about your job. If you're a project manager, if you're in sales, if you're in marketing, if you're a developer, work with the AI. Make it your buddy in a way and have it do all the tasks that you don't like. I think that's a really critical piece of it. When I think about maybe the laborious side that AI can take over in terms of just, the flipping the fries, the hamburgers, those sorts of things, we're going to be allowed to be more in front of people and that human to human, that customer experience. That's how those jobs will shift. So you're not necessarily going to be mopping the floors or flipping the burgers or pouring the coffee, but you're going to be interacting and making that experience, the best that it can be. That human to human touch, I think, could really come back in a way that it hasn't quite since COVID and even before that. And then, just another piece to think about is the power consumption needs for AI.
Right.
We use more and more and more and more. A simple query on ChatGPT takes 10 times more power than a Google search.
Wow.
So think about that and think about as things shift. So that's where a lot of thought right now and focus is into building server farms and looking at different ways to give energy to those server farms, right? Nuclear power, solar power, wind, even fossil fuels. What does that all look like to support this consumption? Because we consume, humans consume.
Yeah.
As more AI capabilities come out, that's going to be a bigger need. So construction of these data farms, maintenance and oversight of these data farms, and then just power as a holistic industry is going to be really top of mind. I think it's going to create a lot of jobs in that kind of capacity.
It's very exciting. We're just in another revolution.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
AI revolution, if call it what it is, right?
Yep, exactly. So when we think about, I'd love to talk about some of the benefits of AI. Now, we already touched on research.
Yep.
And how it makes it so much easier. And you know a bit about healthcare.
I do, yeah.
And you actually are invested in a product as well. And in I think it's called FemTech.
Yeah, so product is called the Pause AI, but it is all about FemTech.
Right.
And that's a really interesting area when it comes to AI. So yeah, let's dig into that a little.
All right. So from a healthcare perspective, what is it that people should be thinking about? I believe that there's some game-changing things that are around the corner, but what's happening today?
Yeah, so diagnostic. Diagnostic is a key area when we think about AI. And it's a little bit of the perception AI.
Okay.
So perception in terms of imaging, right? CAT scans, MRIs, x-rays. AI can catch something that maybe your doctor doesn't. Because it's looking at image after image. This is cancer. This isn't cancer. This is broken. This is not broken. I went to my doctor the other day for my annual eye exam.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, we've got this new solution. It just takes a picture of your eyes and it can then use AI to tell you if you have cataracts or not. And so instead of getting dilated and doing all the different, fun things that dilation does, and I get dilation is rough on me. I can't see for hours. It takes a picture and then it runs it through the system of thousands and thousands, probably hundreds of thousands at this point, pictures to tell you if you've got an issue or not. Right? Why not? Sign me up. So much better.
Yeah.
So I think diagnostics is a huge area. The idea is we should miss less. And save more lives from that. Research, right? It can process the data that researchers are getting faster. It can find themes or DNA sequences. I'm not a medical professional, as we all learned earlier, but you know, it can and learn those sorts of things and maybe find something that we missed, right? Find cancer at stage one versus stage four through just regular checkups and blood work and things like that. So I think that's going to be a big piece of it. And I'm also hoping that it helps narrow the gap. So in today, a lot of our data and a lot of what's being used in this diagnostic process and in this healthcare is heavily skewed male. It is. And it's heavily skewed white male. And that's just the way it's been, you know, and it's, you know, nothing to like be mad about, but it's an opportunity to say, hey, how can we use the technology that we have now to level the playing field and just make it so that things aren't missed. A woman has a heart attack differently than a male has a heart attack. That's just science. And now with this kind of AI at our fingertips, we can understand that rapidly and we can help let doctors know rapidly and understand it. And, you know, the app that you mentioned that I invested in, the Pause AI, it's all about helping women who are going through menopause and perimenopause, which is something that has not been researched, be supported and get the help that they need. And I think those are sort of some of the game-changing AI aspects that are just going to be huge, especially in healthcare.
That's so amazing. So instead of people fearing that, like I'm super excited about it. And I think about, so my sister had cancer and it progressed quite a bit before it was caught. But to the point that you're making, you can take and load in a lot more information, call images, than one doctor, him or herself, can actually go through. So you're going to, if you think about the population across the United States, and you can process that through, I bet they can see more patterns, right?
Exactly.
Be able to diagnose earlier. It's pretty amazing. But the role of the doctor is still there, isn't it?
Oh, and it's needed. Yep. And it's hopeful that they can now focus even more on the patient and the care that they want to give and that they went to school for, rather than kind of the back-end paperwork or sifting through trying to figure this out. Like that patient, human-to-human care that we all, I think, want back in this world, it's really viable with using AI in the right way.
Boy, I would love to have that return. So, Beth, the personal story. My GP, who I've gone to for over 30 years, was a kid. And he retired this year. I was so sad. He actually retired earlier than anticipated because he said, you know, I'm being asked, Michelle, to compress the time with the actual patient because there's so many other things to do. And it's so sad to me, right?
Horrible,
because,
you
know, he is one of those doctors that, he takes me very late unless you're the first one in because he takes time.
Yeah.
And doesn't really comply, right?
Yeah.
But to think about the time that they could get back for that real human interaction, I think is just
needed.
Amazing.
It's needed.
It really is, yeah. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, something about this, robotics and robots and the application of that. I love the idea that you are, or I love your career. It's very fascinating to me that you have the ability to come up with this creative applications within the business world to solve true business challenges. So talk a little bit about robots, robotics, whatever you want to, what you think they can do, and maybe even how you have leveraged them for your clients.
Yeah, no, robotics are interesting. And you know, we're not talking Terminator. We're not talking iRobot, you know, Robot Wars. No, we're
Darn.
Not. We're not.
Okay.
I know. You know, we'll see what the future holds. I likely will not be here for that and probably not you. But today's robotics are really, you know, think about the same way that you think about A. They're an assistant. You know, they take away a lot of the manual tasks that people don't like to do, simplify it, and make us more efficient, more productive. So what I'm seeing a lot of right now is robotics in distribution centers. Distribution centers, some of them are miles long. I mean, literally, I've been to one that was a mile long. It's huge. It's here to there. Imagine having to walk from one end to the other end to another to get things, right? To you're picking for an e-commerce delivery. You know, the robotics are speeding that up. They're stacking them more efficiently. They're going from one end into the other. They don't tire. You can keep you know, your plant, your manufacturing, your distribution center running 24 hours a day. And then supplement with humans who can check things, can pack things, can make sure the robots are up and working, right? Not taking away from that human element, but we're taking away a lot of the grind that used to be part of that process. So it's faster, more efficient. And they're, you know, they're smart, but they're simple at this point. You know, giant Roombas or, you know, arms that can pick and know the right places to put it all through those AI automated tasks. And that can be really powerful. It's a big investment up front, but over time, you really can leverage that speed and efficiency. And, you know, we still have a labor shortage issue. So mm-hmm. it can supplement that as well, especially as, you know, we as humans get trained up on kind of maybe some new skill sets we need to now interact and work with the robotics as opposed to doing the robot's job. So I think that's a big key piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. In stores, you might have heard of this thing called the digital twin. So a lot of big retailers are using it to understand what is in their store. Mm-hmm. What does it look like? A bot can go and scan all the stores when the store is closed or at hours when it's not super busy and can know inventory levels. What needs to be restocked? Are prices correct? You know, are there products in the wrong place, right? So that you get in the next day as a manager and you have a plan for your team. You know, John, please go handle this aisle and restock this. Sally, go make sure this is done. Chase, you know, we got to change all these prices out, right? Things like that really optimize the speed and the efficiency for a manager to run the day-to-day operations that they have.
Wow. So. That's pretty amazing. So I thought about two use cases. I was very recently in Mexico at a very... I mean, it was cutting edge distribution center. However, they had pickers of people, right? And so in this particular case, it's clothing, and they're taking the orders, and they're, you know, the clothes are hanging up high, and there are women that are, you know, shorter than I am, right? Like small women, I'm 5'2", and they're reaching up, trying really hard to grab these clothes, put them in this big, huge, heavy, that look like a wheelbarrow, but much, much bigger in size. And then they run as fast as they can to get to the next aisle, right? Because everything is on time. Because they're paid based on how quick they pick.
Yeah.
And we were just watching these young women, most of it was women, and they're running as fast as they can. And they're grabbing these clothes and they're throwing them in. I'm like, oh my God. And they have accents. They can run into each other. And there's like all this crazy stuff that goes on. And I wonder, right? So, what they would do if they weren't picking? I still believe there's probably a role for
packing.
Them. Packing,
yeah.
There you go. Packing. So they go from pick to pack.
Yeah,
yeah. And I bet with more accuracy.
You go to pick to pack, less workman's comp, less safety hazards. Right? A robot crashes in a robot, it's okay.
Yeah.
Person crashes into a person or into an aisle or something.
It was crazy because there's very little visibility too as they're running.
And think about how important actually packing is, right? You get a delivery, I don't know, maybe you order shampoo. Shampoo's open. Half of it's gone. Yeah. Or this is broken. Or, you know, it's just, you know, you buy from a high-end brand and it comes in a box that looks like, you know, a child just threw it in.
Right.
Right. So as we think about delighting our customers and the customer experience, that packing actually becomes pretty critical. They can have everything brought to them and they can package up nicely and you're going to process a lot more efficiently, correctly, and just better presentation experience overall.
Hmm. I was also thinking about, so I owned retail stores. Oh my gosh,
we'd have to
close for inventory. It was like, I know, I never want to do it again. So a great experience.
Yeah.
I will never regret it.
I worked at Hollister in high school. I would every now and then do the overnight shift where we had to count all the inventory and flip the store. And I don't wish that on anyone.
No, it's like a lot of work. Now, what about personalized experiences?
Yeah. So let's talk about retail, personalized experience. And that's perception AI or computer vision or kind of the new nomenclature is vision AI.
Okay,
vision AI. Yeah, using the camera's vision to understand what's happening.
Okay.
So we could go really big brother on it. And, you know, you walk into Nordstrom's and they immediately know you've walked in, and they immediately know that you like room temperature water, and you generally buy these brands. They could have someone meet you at the door while someone else is over there with your water, picking out some outfits they might think you like, getting you a nice fitting room, and creating that really personalized custom experience. On e-commerce, right? You go to a website, you log in, they're going to serve you up everything that they think you would want based on what you've bought before, what you've browsed, what you've looked at. You can start to create that same experience in the actual physical store environment through that. And that's all about that human to human, which I'll really key in on, because I think it's critical, and that delighting the customer. So there's just a lot of different personalized elements that can come into play by using computer vision and understanding your clients and just catering to them.
I just absolutely love that. I got to tell you, I don't like going to really large department stores. Now, Nordstrom does do the personalized experience, but really large department stores, it's exhausting trying to find what I'm looking for. And today, you talk about the labor shortage, I will tell you that at least where we live, it's very hard to find someone to help you, you know, when you're navigating through that experience. I would love that help.
Yeah. Well, and there's also this aspect of personalizing the work experience. So I don't know, I'm a big Instacart person, and I probably spend way too much money on it, but it saves me hours, or so they tell me when I get my little annual readout. You enter a Publix, you're a picker for Instacart, right? Publix can, based on your cart that you're doing, give you the right mapping to go through it in the way that's going to optimize the picking of the products for you.
Wow.
They can, light up, hey, aisle 15 or something like that. Some of them are even going to these really interesting like digital shelving where a light could actually pop up when you're in the vicinity and say, this is the canned beans you're looking for, or here's your Cheerios, or whatever it may be, right? So that makes my work experience better, easier, more efficient.
Sure does.
So there's things like that can be personalized to the job function as well, not just on the customer side.
Pretty fascinating. So we'll have a little fun here. We had in the past, so many throughout history, where we are today, I'll argue today, and some of it may be very in the very near future, it's been, speculated. So I think about the Jetsons, which came out, I think before we were born, actually, but then it did come out in seasons. But I was surprised it was only one season that ran, because it ended up playing through multiple years.
I feel like it was always on
kid,
in the 80s, yeah.
I know. I think they brought it back in the 70s or the 80s. I can't remember the first time, but Jetsons.
Yeah.
I like to think about it as utopia to dystopia.
Yeah.
Orson Welles, 1984.
Okay.
So
archives.
Let's get into, right? I know. Where they got it right and maybe got it wrong from your perspective.
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. Well, we're not flying cars yet.
We're not.
I wish we were, though.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I think probably, right? We have planes. They're getting smaller. I've seen these little hover-type planes/cars that have been out there. Distances are very long, but you can do a deep dive on Netflix on some pretty interesting stuff. So a couple good documentaries that I'll send over, and you can put in the show notes. But
okay.
I think that's one aspect that they definitely didn't get right. But what's interesting, and if you were at CES, some of this was unveiled, is like the personal robot. That's coming. That can help and support and do tasks. Now, the level of tasks and where it's at, that's still a big runway. But if I think about their robot, that was kind of their nanny/ house.
Rosie.
Yes, thank you. Rosie, yes. Right? There are elements of that that are definitely coming true and perpetuating, that kind of Jetson mentality. I wish I could just go through a conveyor belt and my hair and makeup was done.
I know.
Right? Unfortunately, we're not quite there. But what I think they didn't have any clue of and didn't think about, right? It's very robotic. It's very flying cars. it's the the world of online that we live in, this digital space. Mm-hmm. And neither of those really touch on the digital space and how we're using that. And that's, you know, where I'm really seeing this AI and this evolution of technology. And this is where's Jetsons, where's Orson Welles taking off for us. Mm-hmm. More than, you know, what they looked at back in the 60s and the 50s and
right.
and kind of imagined. So our digital consumption and our desire for it and just use of it, I think is really shifting us away from maybe what they imagined and envisioned there.
Yeah. Come to think of it, they don't go as deep there, do they?
No.
Now, Orson Welles, 84. I think that's very fascinating. When you think about, because I went and I'm trying to remember, I think I went back and read that book again in like 2020 when we were all on lockdown, or maybe 2019, whatever. I'm reading all kinds of stuff. And I thought it was very interesting because they talked about the TV that looks back at you, right? But really, it also could communicate.
Yeah.
So this virtual communication, I thought that was fascinating. And the dystopian view, though. Right? It was very, very dark. So people think about, I think that they, when they fear AI, they might be thinking about that. So bring us to your reality on that.
Yeah. So in a way, we do have some of that, right? Think about, you know, our Siris and, you know, Google Homes.
Yep.
You know, I'm pretty sure I have a little screen that talks back to me now.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of there in that sense, and you can interact, and AI will continue to evolve that. But it doesn't have to be dark and dreary. It can be bright and exciting and, you know, that AI revolution that we're talking about. So, you know, for me, I think there's a couple things that come in play to avoid the dark and dreary and this dystopian that we need to kind of keep top of mind. I think it's the ethical side of AI. Mm-hmm. How do we look at AI and ensure that our ethics and our values, the human aspect of who we are, the good human aspect we are in play there, right?
Right.
The good applications of it versus there's always going to be evil in the world. Mm-hmm. There's always criminals. We can't stop it. But how can we ensure that the leaders that we have out there are focused on that side of the house? I think there's governance, not regulation or restriction. I think there's, you know, there are laws that need to be in place to support it. If we think about data privacy laws,
right.
It's a natural continuation of that. That's really what it is. So if we think about data privacy and how we use it, it's the same way for AI. So there definitely needs to be that governance and that support, not restriction. I think if we start talking restriction, we start talking regulation, that's when dystopian really starts coming to fruition.
Right.
And we should start to worry. If we embrace it and we know that we need to be aware of things like data bias. Mm-hmm. You know, AI engine is only as good as the data that's put into it. Those can be biases around age, demographics, social status, wealth, race, gender, right? Those are all biases that can go into AI. How do we work to avoid that and make sure the data is inclusive and supportive? That's going to be critical to avoiding Orson Welles' dystopian, black, dreary kind of reality.
So let's dig a little bit deeper into and kind of what people need to know around the whole ethics. There's this line that people worry about, particularly with like government crossing, which is what's the difference between, maybe it belongs private sector, would love to get your opinion, but the difference between governance and data protection and control and censorship.
Yeah.
Which we've been hearing a lot about. So no news to you, I'm sure, on Zuckerberg coming out now, recently, in the last few months, saying how he was forced to censor out information during COVID, I think, in particular, in other areas. So how do we actually make sure that we're good stewards of and we've got good governance? And I also believe it needs to be there. But where people don't feel that it's controlling what we actually have available to us, the censorship aspect.
Yeah, I think it always comes down to a healthy balance. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be all private sector. It shouldn't be all government.
Yeah.
It should be working together collectively to understand the impacts and the impacts to everybody across the board. What should that team look like? It should be a diverse makeup. You know, we've got some you know, incredibly strong and intellectual men, women, you know, of all races and all creeds across. Like, we need to get that collective group looking at it and thinking about the good, the bad, worst case, best case. You know, I hate the word censorship because I think that just shouldn't be in our vocabulary. Freedom of speech is who we are. Now, there's freedom of speech that does no harm. And how do we, you know, create that environment? If someone has the answer to that, I would love that. It kind of goes down to this, you know, bright light of where technology can take us and the great things we can do if we all band together and work together and bring the brightest minds together. You know, I do think government has a place, and I do think private sector has a place. And I think it's always going to be about balance. And I think that's the key word: balance, diversity of thought and views, and coming at it with the idea of good intention and goodwill, and not a nefarious or regulation or censorship mentality.
So what advice would you give to, like, business leaders that are trying to figure out now, okay, how do we leverage AI in our workplace?
Yeah.
And what are the things that they need to be thinking about? Benefits, and then maybe things that they should be aware of that could be concerning.
Yeah. So holistically looking at business, I'll take kind of my retail focus out. Yeah. You know, build a team around this. Mm-hmm. And not just IT. You know, build that diverse team that maybe has project management or HR or legal or finance or marketing. There's some great creatives there. And build a team, right? Maybe you can't hire someone or a group collective right away, but create a steering committee. Find out how they're using it today, because there are a lot of them probably using it that you might not even be aware of, which is, you know, not necessarily a bad thing. But when you start using it collectively as a business and all those data inputs and those agents that maybe someone created or a GPT someone else created, you use it for the company, right? Some really great things happen. So I think first and foremost, accept it. Know it's there. Know it's happening. Create a steering committee of diverse teams across your organization that can help drive this. I'd ultimately hire a point person that knows AI, knows it really well, and can lead and drive that committee, and can also be responsible for creating your roadmap. Have your North Star of where you want to go to, and that person can help drive to that based on what they know. Work with IT to rule some things out. You know, work with HR to integrate into other elements. Work with marketing and sales so that, you know, that front-facing view to customers is really, you know, maximizing AI in the way it is. You know, that's where I would start. There's also some really great companies out there that are consulting on this. And you don't have to always pay an arm and a leg to do it, right? There's some that will do it, you know, just because they want other areas of your business, and they're really smart in it and they understand it, right? So look for those partnerships. And maybe for some of the larger enterprises, you might want to bring in some of these newer consulting firms that are really on the edge of what's happening and have, you know, deep relationship with NVIDIA and the engineering stack behind them that can help guide you in your path. There's a lot of ways you can kind of break it, but I definitely would say get your steering committee.
Yeah.
Build your roadmap of where you want to be. Hire that point person. And then depending on your size or scale, you know, you can bring in other people, other sources, other companies to help you accelerate that path to your North Star.
Yeah, I think that's great. That's really good advice, because a lot of times I know I'm around business leaders, like, we just need to get in there.
Yeah.
Tell me what company X is doing, because we're going to do that, you know, a competitor. And I love the idea
of sitting
back. Right. Because what's right for somebody else may not be exactly right for you and your company and where you are at that point. I love the idea of having that, having a governance committee in place to kind of help you make those decisions. So people talk about, and their concern is sentient AI. I know it's not here. Ex machina.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
You know, so let's play around for a minute about that idea. Will it ever have a conscious? Will it never have a conscious? That's another question. Will it actually, I will say that it's very interesting. I've even seen in ChatGPT where it's become more robotic in responses. And now I'm getting things like, That's wonderful. You're going to see your dad! Exclamation yeah. point. A mother-daughter, yeah, a mother-daughter trip.
Yeah.
Wow, how fun, right? Whereas before it would be, here are the places to go and kind of a laundry list. So tell me about kind of that. How does it get more emotional, if you will?
Yeah.
And then what do you think the path is on sentient AI?
Yeah, so your wonderfulness, right? That's the evolution of conversational AI.
Yeah.
AI is learning to converse. It's learning the art of a conversation where, you know, you give and you take, you ask questions back. So yep. when I get my answer, I usually get a question or two back. Is this enough? Do you want me to explore any of that? How does this make you feel? Mm-hmm. Right? It's asking me how I feel. That's a little odd, but that's conversation. And it's just learned. So it can emulate, and that's what it's gonna learn. Sentient feelings, emotions, right? Will it ever have that? I don't know. And I don't want to speculate on that, but do I know it can learn? Do I know it can learn that you're mad in your tone? Can it learn that you're sad in your tone, that you're happy? And can it learn based on those tones, based on your body language, based on you, you know, if we're talking perception AI, right? Not even, you know, responding or how your voice is, right? Is it trembling? It'll learn to pick that up and understand it, and it'll learn what the appropriate response is.
Fascinating.
And that's just basic learning. That's machine learning, that's understanding, and it's just using data to respond back appropriately.
I think that to ground people in this, and you know, to me, this is where the fear kind of goes away. It is still data, it is still powered by people, and it's learning.
Yeah.
Caution, the cautionary tale. Part of it would be, remember that and don't take everything at face value. Still use your own thinking, your own brain, your own mind, because you talked about how it's only really good, the output, the yeah. outcome, only as good as that which has been input.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
So I want to talk to you about how you become or how you maintain your own creativity. You've got to come up with these creative solutions. And, you know, we here in my business, we talk about, we use creative problem solving to solve problems for our clients, right? So we are solving sales challenges all day long. And I'm always curious to understand how other people keep themselves inspired and creative when you're solving a particular business challenge. So what are some of the things that you do, Beth?
Yeah, so great question. I'm gonna kind of take two paths on it, mm-hmm. right? So one is just from a personal perspective. Mm-hmm. I travel. I love to travel. It's a passion of mine. I like to get out and be a little uncomfortable
yeah.
when I travel, right? Different countries, different cultures, try food. I have tried, you know, guinea pig. Don't recommend it. I've tried guanaco, which is like a llama. I actually recommend that one. You know, and I think that being uncomfortable breaks down barriers. It makes you think differently. You're not so caught up in, I need to respond to this email, right? You visualize and see different things that you will never see in your day-to-day life. So I'm a big proponent. I always like to do a big trip, you know, a year, somewhere different, someone new. And I really encourage my team to get out there, use their vacation days. That's, you know, I use them, please go and yeah. do something yeah. that's impactful. So I think that's really helpful. I also took up golf recently, which is like a really easy way, but a lot of the actually male colleagues.
Golf is not easy.
No, but a lot of male colleagues I was, overseeing, they were on my team. They were all going on these different golf events and they were like, oh, you golf? And I was like, sure. I learned to golf, and I've made some amazing connections now with these guys that I wouldn't have before out
That's
on the golf
great.
Course, and I'm learned a lot. And you know, I get to golf with my dad and my brother now, which you know is a really memorable experience for me. And it's a great outlet for creativity. So I think that helps me bring back a refreshed view, whether it's you know just short term over the weekend or you know a big trip where I can really get away. When I'm at work, I like to kick it old school style. I like to pull up a whiteboard, get out the sticky notes,
yeah.
and bring the team in, right? And just do some like random exercises. You know, we do some things like, hey, if your brand was a car, what would it be? If your brand was a music band, what would you be, right? Just to get some creativity going. And then once we're in that mind state, kind of a different flow, then let's dig into the challenges. And let's still do it with whiteboards, and let's do it with sticky notes, and we can capture it all. And now I can take a picture and AI can translate it for me instead of me having to do the notes, which is great. But that's just another way of you're moving. You're talking different colors into the work environment. And I find a lot of inspiration and a lot of aha moments happen during that process.
I think that's great. So we also, you are here at our office. We have a lot of whiteboards.
I love it. Give me a good whiteboard.
But I got to tell you, although we were just having a meeting this morning and my partner was saying that he started, and his handwriting is really tough. He was, you know, writes down his notes and he started dumping them into GPT, where it's, you know, synthesizing his notes. And he said, and they're really good. I hadn't thought about taking a picture of a whiteboard.
Yeah, take a
and
picture.
And loading it in. That's a great idea.
Yep. Just take a picture.
I love it. And so as you look ahead over the next couple of years, we'll talk too, because things are changing so rapidly. Heck, probably over the next year. What are the things that you're most excited about with technology and things that are happening? And is there anything that is concerning to you that keeps you up at night? Not to be cliche, but
I'm excited that I think we're finally taking the actual next step in practical application of AI. So the past 2 years has been AI this, AI that, you know, and we dabble here, we'll dabble there. You know, working with some of my clients, we're moving from pilot to scale. We have proven ROIs, whether it's at the self-checkout center or it's, you know, just within the safety and security realm. I mean, there's tons of use cases out there, but we've actually proven ROI and now we're scaling. And that's super exciting. I love it. And I love that technology is now accelerated at this pace. We call it end of usefulness instead of end of life. Mm-hmm. So in the past, you know, a camera, you would use it until that thing broke down you could not, you know, get the feed anymore. Now, you know, hardware, software, applications, AI, they're all accelerating this pace where that acceleration is going to outpace the actual hardware usefulness.
It's happening.
It is, yeah. I mean, even think about like phones or iPads. Mm-hmm. I've got the old iPad. I can't fire that thing up anymore.
No.
It actually works fine. If I could get it fired up, I just can't get the latest operating system on it. It's just how things are working because of the acceleration. So that's really exciting. It makes me, you know, get up in the morning and try and figure out, you know, what's our next client challenge and what does it look like in digging in. But what keeps me up at night is what we talked about a lot, right? Is this still this fear out there and this maybe lack of acceptance of what's coming? And how do we educate everybody that this is helpful? This isn't going to, you know, just change our world as we see it in terms of like who you are as a human and who it's going to make it better. It's going to supplement it. But there's that fear that we talked about out there. Or sometimes it's just like a worry or concern of I'm afraid to make this investment. Or I'm afraid that if I do this and I do this computer vision, I'm going to get a lawsuit because people don't understand that I'm actually maybe not doing facial recognition. And that's something we didn't get into, facial recognition. That could be a whole separate podcast. But, you know, these are the things that, you know, we as, humans are trying to wrap our brains around and understand. And what does that look like? How do we get that message across? How do we make everyone not be okay, be excited about it?
Right.
I think that's a critical piece. And then I'm just also worried, and we talked about it too, is just good versus bad AI, right? You know, like let's keep our ethics, let's keep our values, let's keep what makes us human at the core of the development of this AI, and we're going to be great. It's going to be amazing. But we always know there's also that dark side of human nature. And how do we not let that overpower the good that can bring to it? And it's just, it's food for thought, but something that is, I think, on the minds of all of our leaders out there right now.
Yeah. So how can people learn more just about AI and kind of keep up with the technology?
Yeah. So one, there are a ton of free courses out there. Coursera, Udemy, Google, just look them up. You can, you know, in a couple of hours, be a pro. Well, maybe not a pro, but you can really be up to speed about what it is. Talk to ChatGPT and Copilot. Just ask it questions. It'll give you a ton of information back really quickly. But you know, one of my favorite go-tos is NVIDIA. And NVIDIA CEO Jensen, he does a ton of keynotes, you know, across the globe every year. He just did one at CES, look that up. The whole thing is on YouTube. It's a little over an hour long. And that really gives you this awesome view of like where AI is at, where it's been, right? Roots in gaming and kind of more the machinery manufacturing side to where it's at now and where it's going. And it's just super well done, succinct. So I really encourage anyone who's listening, go check that one out.
That's great. So Beth, can people reach out to you on LinkedIn and connect?
Yeah, absolutely. For example,
Beth Bergman will have all your contact in the show notes.
Perfect.
And I want to thank you so much for being here today. Thank you so much for your knowledge and wisdom in this space. And I am so excited to talk to a real professional woman in technology. There aren't a lot of you out there.
There's not as many as I'd like, but hey, we're growing in ranks and it's a nice balance that we're getting to. So we'll get there.
That's right. So thanks so much for being here and I hope that you'll be back.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. This was fun. Got to geek out and some good topics.
Thanks. Hey, it's Michelle. Thank you so much for listening today. If you enjoy our podcast and know someone who you believe would make a great guest, I would love to hear from you. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's talk. I'd love to hear your feedback. And as always, may it inspire you in your own personal and professional journey of life. Run to-